This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio by the A-team, Matt Ketchell, a.k.a. Ketch, from BBC Match of the Day magazine, and Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport. What a show we have for you. So much to talk about. Newcastle drawing with defending champion City 2-2 on the weekend. Some brilliant goals, a brilliant game. Newcastle beat City last year, one of four teams that did. Now they draw with them again, seemingly having Man City's number. Delighted to say Greg Tomlinson will be joining us to give us an update on everything that concerns Newcastle in and around all of the football matters. Then we'll be looking towards tomorrow night's game against Sheffield United, another return for Steve Bruce against one of his former Premier League clubs. He does them all: Newcastle, Sunderland, Sheffield United, Sheffield Wednesday, Birmingham, Aston Villa,
Norwich.
He's literally across all of the derbies. He is making a return again tomorrow night. Then we will be doing a very special Newcastle team of the decade. Possibly we're going to have a little bit of fun with it. We're going to give you our worst team of the decade as well, as we end this decade and as we go to 2020. Well, we have to start with the Newcastle City game. It was 2-2. Ketch, what did you make of it?
Didn't see it coming. Very, very pleasantly surprised. I thought the team were excellent with the ball and even better without it. We've got our organisation back. We've had a few games. I'm thinking of Norwich and Leicester where we haven't looked very organised at all at the back. But now there's a without the ball, we looked really, really rigid and organised. And City's game plan, the way that the shapes they pass the ball, is designed to pull you out of position. And our players just weren't budging, and they couldn't find a way through. And it was really refreshing to see. And then going forward, it was highlighted on Match of the Day. They were really positive. Special mention for Almiron. He's having a really bad time. Confidence must be low, but he's still being positive. He's still trying the difficult ball. He could easily just do one touch and play it safe, but he's trying to push forward. He's trying to make something happen. He's been unlucky in front of goal, and I think it's very brave of him to always try and push us on forward, try the difficult pass, and I thought he was excellent.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Ketch. And I think this is what we've spoken about, Aaron, the last few weeks. We get a performance like we did on Saturday, the early kickoff, and then we see a performance like last week to Villa. It's one performance to the next, vastly, vastly different.
That is just the whole thing. It's just this season's been consistency. You know, it's one step forward and two steps back. Mm. But, I mean, if we're getting 7 points from Spurs, Man United and Man City, who's really bothered that we're getting beat? And I know going forward it might be a bit of a worry, but you've just got to enjoy it. Clearly, the players under Steve Bruce are doing essentially what Rafa was doing, and that was when the big teams are coming to St James's. They're not, you know, they're not panicking. And like Ketch said, the defence was fantastic again on Saturday, against, you know, the best attack in the league. So, yeah, I mean, like I say, the Norwich game and the Watford game, the Leicester game are concerns. But I mean, yeah, if they can keep grinding out these performances against the big teams, then we're going to be safe this season.
Yeah, you mentioned the way they set up against those supposedly bigger teams. Well, Newcastle are unbeaten in their past four home league games against the reigning top flight champions. The champions come to town, Ketch, and they just can't get the job done.
Yeah, it makes no sense, really. Really, we couldn't beat Norwich. We couldn't beat Watford or Brighton or Villa. We've beat Man United, Spurs, and got a really good result against City.
And West Ham. And I know they're having their struggles, yeah, but it was a great performance, away performance, sorry.
It just doesn't make any sense at all, really, why we can't beat the... You know, it's quite worrying that we can't beat the likes of Watford and Brighton, teams that should be beaten. But it's really refreshing to see, and I think this is a... It's a team that's built on defence, like we've got such a good defensive unit. I'm looking at the names and... The three that played on Saturday, Clark, Fernandez and Dummett, probably the second choice of the three centre-halves, because you've got Lejeune, Lascelles and Shaw, who I would probably say are off our best three. But then we've got a completely different three who can keep, you know, Man City at bay and give us a chance to get a draw. And Fernandez, I want to speak about Fernandez. I just feel really safe when he's playing. I really like him. He's very calm. Well, he's, I wouldn't say he's calm. He's got a bit of an edge to him, a bit of a South American... You know, you leave a foot in, and I wouldn't want to play against him if I was a striker. I think he's got a bit of a hard man, I think, and he just organises it, and it's really refreshing to see him come in and stabilise us. And to say we haven't missed Lascelles, the captain, the heartbeat of the club for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years is speaks volumes for him. So defensively, we've got a foundation there. We just need the front three to get going.
Yeah, well, you mentioned we need the front three to get going. 8 of Newcastle's 13 Premier League goals this season have been scored by defenders. Aaron, that is the highest ratio for any team in the Premier League, currently at 62%. But the goals on the weekend, they didn't come from defenders. And what a beautiful 2 goals they were.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's just deja vu every time I sit here and say they've got to score at some point the front three. But obviously it's promising that the goals are coming from elsewhere, especially now Shelvey's starting to find his eye for the goal. He had spells where he couldn't really find the net and he was out the team. And obviously Jethro Williams is looking fantastic going forward. You know, probably going to keep Matt Ritchie out the team once he's back fit. I don't think anybody would have said that was possible 2 months ago. So, look, yeah, it's positive. And like Ketch touched on, you know, Almiron was helping out on Saturday fantastically. He's got his first assist. So I know I say it every week, but the goals have got to start coming from the front three. But I feel they will, you know. This, as much as the results have been inconsistent, there's clearly a bond in that team, you know. You know, it looks much improved from the start of the season. It looks like there's more cohesion between the attack and the defence. So, look, long may it last that Shelvey in the midfield are scoring, but yeah, it's got to start soon for the front three.
Well, long may it last. Obviously, last week I said that you got mentioned on the West Ham fan show. We had a little bit of fun with it and they spoke how what they thought of the Newcastle side. This week I've done the City fan show, Man City. They were full of praise for Newcastle. They said Newcastle were well worthy of their point, you know, good value on the day, really speaking highly of the team. And they just said, you know, it would have been incredible to win by that De Bruyne goal, which we haven't spoke about, which was an incredible, incredible strike. But it needed, and it was waiting for a moment like that, because they just couldn't break you down, could they, Ketch? For all of their possession, 77%, you know, they couldn't get past those lines.
No, it was extremely, extremely organised, and maybe if Aguero was playing, it might be a different story, because he always scores against us. And when you play teams like City, you need a bit of luck. And I think we had that with a couple of chances they missed. Sterling at the end, I'm thinking, with his weak finish, and Bernardo Silva flashed one wide. And you need a bit of that, but we were very organised, and we weren't falling for that trick, pulling players out of position, getting the byline cut back. You see so many City goals like that. We just didn't fall for the trick. We were deep, very deep, and I think they didn't like that. And there wasn't a surprise when De Bruyne scored from long range, because there just wasn't space to operate in the box. And you did think that was it. But there's a spirit about this team, and I think footballers, they're quite, as supporters, we're on Twitter and we're speaking about the club in pubs and at the ground, and it can be negative. I think the players are completely isolated from this, and I think what they do is they get into the training ground, get their head down, and I think they quite like working with Steve Bruce, and I think he builds their confidence up, and I think he's a likeable guy, and I think the players are definitely playing for him. When we got hammered by Leicester, he was actually very publicly critical about them, and that didn't put them off. They're still playing for them. They're still responding to him, and I think they're just getting on with it. And there's some good, honest players in there who graft, and the stats show that whenever we run more than the opposition, we get results from those games. Whenever we don't outrun the opposition, like against Aston Villa, the results don't tend to come for us. So if we work hard, we'll give ourselves every chance.
Yeah, Aaron, would you go along with that? Obviously, Steve Bruce, another big talking point. We're going to talk about it a little bit more, but was it fair what Kitch was saying?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, Steve Bruce could have so easily just jacked it in at the start when everything was negative and against him. And I think, like Ketch has said, I agree. I think social media and the media in general can be such an echo chamber at times. The players have clearly seen all this, not taken any bit of notice of it. And they clearly do like playing for him. I think, obviously, when you lose a manager like Rafa Benitez, I think anybody coming in would have struggled, especially when it's someone like Steve Bruce. But you've got to give him his credit, you know. He's stuck in. He's been fantastic with the media, I thought, which sometimes he gets a bit of blame for. But I think, yeah, like you said, you know, fantastic after Leicester, you know, fantastic after Arsenal when the players didn't really seem to know what they were doing. So, and also in victory, he's been quite grateful. You know, he hasn't wanted to take the limelight. He hasn't sort of gloated. He was very subdued after Manchester United and Spurs. So, look, long may it last. But I think the players are definitely responding to whatever he's doing behind the scenes.
Obviously, we know his history as Sunderland manager, and we know all what went on this off-season. But is that tied towards Bruce? Is it slowly turning at all, Ketch?
Not really, no. I think that'll always be there. For me, personally, as someone who was an impressionable kid watching us play in the 90s, I still can't get the picture of him lifting the Premier League trophy in 96 when we had the 12-point lead. So he was the captain of Man United. He was singing Cheer Up Alan Shearer on the pitch at Middlesbrough on the last day of the season. So that's mad for me. And Bruce is a strange character. He says some mad things in press conferences. He's unorthodox. He's a bit old school. His tactics, he's so active in the technical area, shouting. I don't think it has much effect. I really don't. I don't see that. And his substitutions.
He's shouting, but he doesn't do tactics, apparently. Well, he does a lot of shouting.
I don't think it's having any. I think he'd be better off. I think he could just sit down, and I don't think it would make much of a difference. His substitutions are weird. It's, you know, chuck Gale on and launch the ball up to him. And so there's definitely things that are still not great, but the players are responding to him, and he is getting results, and it's inconsistent, and I bet even he doesn't know what I bet even he doesn't you know he said himself he didn't see that performance at Norwich come in. He never saw that performance at Leicester. Villa, I bet he was surprised because we were playing so well prior to the international break. So it must be strange. It must be frustrating for them. Him and the backroom staff of Steve's, they must be wondering what type of team's going to turn up when we play on Thursday at Sheffield United, which is going to be a tough game. I know we're speaking to Callum later. So it's really interesting. It's a mad season. The emotions we've had, you know, despair, elation, a bit of hope, anger. It's just it's a crazy, crazy season. And I think we'll know better when we play Crystal Palace at home on the 21st of December. Once we've played that game, we've played everyone in the league. And I think we'll probably be able to give a good assessment there of where we're at. But as long as we're nearer the middle of the table than the relegation zone, then I feel a bit better about that.
All right, we want your season assessment after you've played everyone. I'm marking that, Dan Ketch. Aaron, what did you make, though, of the character and the grit and the strength of the side? Because every time City scored, Newcastle replied very, very quickly. And that was good to see, wasn't it?
Oh, 100%. I mean, when De Bruyne scored that goal, one, the time that it came, and two, just the manner of it. I mean, when a goal like that happens, it would have been so easy for the players to just go, well, what can we do about that? It was genius. But whenever City scored, there was never that feeling that, you know, the heads were down and that we weren't going to come back into it. And, you know, that's been the case a couple of times this season. So, yeah, look, I think the good thing about Newcastle over the last couple of years is that they've always been quite a tight group. You know, even in the Championship, they were tight. And they've always been grafters, you know, Lascelles and Richie and all that have really, you know, sort of instilled this, you know, this sort of mentality within the players. So it's good to see, and it's good to see that when the going gets tough and, you know, when Bruce has came in and Benitez has left, that, you know, none of them have sort of reflected the attitude of the City, which was so negative, you know, and the attitude of the fans. So it's credit to them and it's credit to Steve Bruce.
Is there not the work on Dunketch a little bit, but like, if they don't go and get a result tomorrow or the next few games, then all of this, what we're saying about the City game, it's undone a little bit, because we've been here this season, we've spoke about the good performances, and then the next week we're sitting here scratching our heads because we can't work it out where the next performance has come from.
Oh, I'm fully prepared for us to not get anything on Thursday night, because it's just completely inconsistent. It's just all about, chipping away at the points, getting points on the board. And the City game, although it was a 1 point, I think it was much more than that. It was the confidence getting a draw against a team like Man City will give you. It could be invaluable. But it's Premier League, so many tough games. Just straight away you're into Sheffield United away, going to be a really hostile atmosphere, team like relentlessly pressing. And it's going to be interesting to see how he sets up, because I'm looking at Joe Linton and I'm not really got much positive to say about him. He looks a bit lost now, and I'm wondering, is Bruce going to set up with three up front away at Sheffield United? I think that's a bit risky, so I'm interested to see how he approaches that one, because he's found a system now and he seems reluctant to tweak it. Like, we didn't change the tactics at all from Bournemouth to Villa, which is a bit worrying, and we need to have bespoke game plans for each opposition. So if he just chucks three up front against Sheffield United, I'm not sure that's going to work, and I do worry about Joe Linton, because he's not even getting chances, and he really needs to get further up the pitch and just be more of a number nine rather than this number 10 link up deep player that he's got with these two lunatics running either side of him, St. Maximin and Almirón. So a bit worried about Joe Linton, but we'll see. There's loads of games over Christmas, so it could be the making of him.
I think for me, more than tomorrow, I think the real test is going to be Sunday at home at Southampton, because that's a team where at home on paper you've got to be beating them. And even though we haven't been beaten at home since the start of the season against Arsenal, the performances against Watford and Brighton at home just do not fill me with any confidence that Southampton are going to come, we're going to win, because that is just Newcastle in a nutshell. You know, get a result against the big teams and then the games you're just screaming to win doesn't happen. So I think if they get beat tomorrow off a very good Sheffield United side, it won't matter too much. It's then Southampton on Sunday where you're thinking, where is the consistency if you can't beat them?
Yeah, two big games that we're going to be talking all about. And Callum Cheswick, Sheffield United reporter for Varva, will be joining us later to give us his prediction on the game. We will be doing our very own Newcastle team of the decade, and Newcastle linked with yet again another takeover, this time American. We're talking all about that and our team of the decade.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with Matt Ketchell, a.k.a. Ketch from BBC Match of the Day magazine, Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport, and delighted to say, joining us now in a late dash to the studio to give us all the latest, it is Greg Tomlinson from the Newcastle United Supporters Trust. Greg, I'm going to give you a chance to catch your breath for a minute before we bring you in, because there is so much to talk about at the minute, obviously, outside of Newcastle. What is going on at Strawberry Place update, but there has been news of a takeover. Obviously, it was reported today, an American takeover this time. Ketch, what do you know about it? What have you heard?
Well, I take these with such a pinch of salt. I try not to. You know, as Newcastle supporters, it's really disheartening to read into these takeovers, because we've had so many stories like this, and it's never happened. And to me, this one with the American group, with Peter Kenyon at the helm trying to raise interest and get funds. It's just people who want to buy a football club but haven't got the money. And it smacks to me of a publicity stunt to try and get investment to maybe try and raise the funds. They need at least 500 million, 300 to buy the club, 100 to do up the training ground and the ground, 100 to put into the squad. And if they can't afford to even buy the club, then I'm not too confident that that they're the best option for us. So pinch of salt, and if we hear about it, then I think if we ever get taken over, we'll never hear about it and it'll be done. That's my view on takeover, so I take any stories like this with a pinch of salt, unfortunately.
That is the exact way I feel. I've just noted down here, since we've came back up from the Championship, there's been talk of Amanda Staveley buying the club, which went on for months and months and months, and everyone thought, oh my god, it's happening. Didn't happen. Over the summer you had, you know, this Dubai royal family linked to the Man City cousin. Everyone's thinking, oh my god, we're going to sign Kylian Mbappe. Like, that was what it was like. You've had this obviously new American group. You've had talk of, you know, the Atlanta United owner from the MLS buying the club. You've had a group of Mexicans trying to buy the club and apparently met Mike Ashley.
Who was that? Arthur Blank, was that?
Yeah, Arthur Blank, yeah. There was rumours that he was, you know, interested in putting some money in it. This Mexican group, the Ortega group, I think, who have already met with Mike Ashley earlier this season. And then you've obviously got Peter Kenyon, who's just trying to get someone with the funds. So
Vince McMahon, didn't he have a go?
Vince McMahon, yeah. So literally, like Ketch says, until it is done on the dotted line, I don't think we'll hear about it, because Mike Ashley's just tried to, you know, get it out in the media so many times to try and deflect away from, you know, not spending money and the performances on the pitch. I think Newcastle fans now are just sick of it. Until it happens, it's not going to happen. Do you know what I mean?
Well, a man who hears the whispers maybe before anyone else, and we bring him in now, Greg Tomlinson. Greg, once again, a pleasure to have you on the show. You hear these whispers. Ketch said he takes them with a pinch of salt. Are they whispers? Are they rumours? Is there any hint of truth in them?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that that's breaking news for me, because I've been so busy with work today, I didn't even know this had happened. And then I got a text off Sean saying,
unlike Sean. Several texts, you mean.
Yeah, yeah. About 25 WhatsApps in 30 seconds. Yeah. That's Sean's way, yeah. No, so it's news to me, but I think I agree. I agree with Ketch. When this is done, that we'll hear about it once it's done. It won't play out in the media. You know, Peter Kenyon doesn't have any money.
Yeah, he can't afford it. And as fans, this is really, it's really unhelpful, these stories, and it gets people's hopes up, and that's not right. There's fans out there who'll read this and take it as good as gold,
yeah.
and it's really unfair and it's really unhelpful. Gets people's hopes up. We're desperate for a new person to take over and breathe life back into the club and fulfil the ambition. I don't think these are the people. I think it's a publicity stunt, and I think a lot of Newcastle fans now have a filter. We don't even read this stuff because it's rubbish.
Do you think that's exactly what it is, Ketch? They sort of prey on Newcastle a little bit because they know the fans are so desperate for someone to take over that they use Newcastle a little bit.
It's clickbait, yeah. I think Newcastle fans as soon as you see the words Newcastle and takeover, you're going to click that link. And I think it's you know, it's a bit of an indictment of the modern media that they live and die by the clicks, and that they if they need a story, that's going to get them some traffic. So personally, I think Newcastle fans need to be wary of that, and I think if we are going to get taken over, it's going to happen very quickly and without anyone knowing until it's, you know, signed, sealed and delivered.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? Living and dying by the clicks. If you want to get involved tonight and click and tweet us, please do at Love Sport Radio, or call us 0208 7020 558 for all your Newcastle views. Let's talk a little bit about how the trust is going, Greg, because it's a pleasure for us to have you here, and any Strawberry Place developments.
Yeah, well, I guess the last time I'm here was the Wednesday before the big planning committee meeting up in Newcastle, where the local council heard the application. I think Sean was on since and explained that, you know, the planning committee voted that through to give permission. You know, we set out our stall, you know, very clear in terms of our concerns there. But it wasn't to be. But, you know, if you don't try, you never achieve anything. So, you know, we tried. Maybe we were a little late to the party, you know. There's already a planning permission there from 2017. So a little bit of regret that we weren't. As a fan base, not just as a trust, you know, as a fan base, weren't organised enough to try and stop it when we actually could, really, at the beginning. So yeah, it went ahead. I used your Arsene Wenger quote.
Thank you.
In my speech. The local press in the room loved that. That was all over that quote. So yeah, we tried. Wasn't a B. We've since reconvened, had a bit of a think about what do you do next, you know, and we've decided that, you know, trying to take legal action against Newcastle City Council really wouldn't be in anyone's interest, really. Likelihood of success, very low. Potential cost, anything between £20,000 and £100,000. You know, so we will continue to talk to the developer and try and effectively force them into being the best neighbour they can be. We've had some really good conversations with them about the Sir Bobby Robson Memorial Garden. They're keen to work with us on that. There's going to be a new Bobby Robson Memorial Garden much closer to the stadium. You'll actually be able to see Bobby's statue from the garden. So, you know, that is a positive out of it. But, yeah, our fundamental position would be that it should never have come to this in the first place. It should be the club developing that land, taking it forward for its own benefit.
I don't think you can stop the juggernaut that is Mike Ashley. He's got so much money and power, and, you know, he can recruit the best lawyers and legal team in the system. It was always going to be a losing battle. I think the trust did everything they could. I don't think whenever you started to defend it, I don't think that would have made a difference. This was probably always going to happen. But now it's interesting. I think you're definitely doing the best thing in terms of opening a dialogue with the developers, because this is happening, let's face it. And the interesting thing that I took from the meeting was that the developers weren't convinced that it would prevent us from extending the Gallagher end. So can you tell us a bit about that? Would there be an option if, say, wanted to put 8,000 on there, they think it still might be able to happen?
So they maintain that it would still be possible, yes. And if you look at the drawings of the ground, and if you kind of do some, I don't know what to call it, you know, basic architecture, I'm not an engineer, with a pencil on a plan, you know, it looks like it would fit. The issue is it would be incredibly close to one of their blocks, only one of their blocks, and, you know, there'd be all sorts of issues there with getting planning permission, because obviously those guys are there, you know, impact on their light. But in terms of its technical feasibility, they maintain that absolutely it could be done. And they maintain as well, their view was actually that in terms of foundations for a big extended Gallagher end, the metro itself, the tunnels for the metro are an even bigger constraint,
yeah,
because you can't plough a foundation for a ginormous stand through a metro line. There are lots of engineering issues there, but they maintain that it could still be done. There's been a previous study.
And I know, obviously, people say, oh, you're getting ahead of yourselves, why do you want to put 8,000? It, the point is bigger than that. It's more actually disconnecting us from ambition. You know, he will be he will be a small footnote in Newcastle's history in the be-all and end-all, and to disconnect us from that ambition of to have a big ground that we could fill. If we were in the Champions League, I'd be confident we'd get, you know, an extra 10,000 on the gate. So, and I think Chris Woff put it best in The Athletic when he said, clubs like Tottenham and Liverpool and Man United are buying up land around their stadium, and they're building their own hotels, museums, fan parks, everything like that. We're selling off land, and we're doing it on the cheap, and another third-party business aka Ashley's son-in-law, is profiting from it. It's an unbelievable thing to happen to a football club.
Yes, I don't think his son-in-law is actually that involved.
Okay.
So I think from what we see, looking at it, his son-in-law is effectively running his property arm for him, but mm-hmm. I don't think he's personally making the money.
It's Mash Holdings making it.
You know, they've made a multi-million pound profit, and that's gone.
So the club made £3 million, and Mash Holdings made six.
We think so, but it's so opaque. It's very difficult to work that out.
And this is the sort of stuff that will come out in the wash when Ashley leaves. We'll find out how where everything's gone after that. And this is what the problem Rangers had.
We certainly will, Greg, because we've got you here. I just wanted to ask. Last week, Ketch introduced me certainly and brought up this brilliant story that I've now become obsessed with. You know where I'm going with this Hanwell tank.
I got excited.
This is it, and I got excited, and I've done a little bit more research. I saw that you went there. You wrote an article on it. I read that article. It's brilliant. And how much of Hanwell Tan are you familiar with now in your game? Because me and Ketch, he's brought this to us. I've got to say now, I pester Ketch more about Hanwell Tan than I do Newcastle.
So, you know, I live in West Ealing, right, in London. And at the end of the season last year, I decided I'm going to not renew my season ticket. And then I just started thinking, right, well, I still need to go to a match every now and then, you know, something local. What's my nearest non-league team to my flat, basically? And a quick Google, and I was like, what? I couldn't believe it. So that literally about 15-minute walk up the road from me is Hanwell Town. They don't actually play in Hanwell. And then the nickname is the Geordies. They play in black and white. They were formed in 1920 from a group of Geordies that came down to London for work. You know, that's why I'm here. That's why I live in London now. Because, you know, this is where, you know, unfortunately, the economy of Newcastle is not quite the same. As much as I love the place, you know, lots of us end up down here. There's loads of Newcastle fans in London, right? Found this team, decided to go along. It was FA Cup day. Absolute cracker of a game. You can stand on the terrace and have a pint in an actual glass made of glass. Watch the match, you know. Unbelievable. And it was actually a great day out. Unfortunately, despite the fact absolutely flying at the top of the league and have only lost one league game this season, the two times I've been, they've got beat. So that's the Newcastle curse, isn't it? United curse.
It certainly is. I think a few more of us will be joining. Ketch will definitely be going to a game soon, and you're still trying to organise that friendly, Ketch.
Trying.
No pressure, sorry.
Yeah, well, we had Elsa on the show last week, and I've been in touch with her, and she's saying things like... everyone who's a member of the Trust can get in for half price to Hanwell. And they're talking about doing a special game where if you wear a Newcastle United shirt, you get in half price, which I'm absolutely up for. Yeah. Just need to decide which shirt to wear.
So I spoke to her afterwards, actually. Mm-hmm. And we were coming up with this idea of actually we should actually organise something properly, try and get as many as we can. Maybe on a weekend when Newcastle don't have a game, an international weekend or something, whack tickets on Eventbrite and get a load of people together, meet in a local pub. Get a load down. You know, their average attendance is 150. I reckon we're good.
Definitely. And yes, with the 100th anniversary coming next year, I said, look, come on, let's get a little social media petition going. Can the club send a team down? I think it's a big ask, to be honest, but I could see them sending an under-18s or an under-23s. Yeah. And I've put them in touch with someone, so... Hopefully something can happen in pre-season.
Well, I have to applaud you. It's brilliantly the way that you both have taken it on. I think we all have now. We're all secret fans. And we're not so secret, but we are fans of Hanwell Tan. Really excited to talk about them a little bit further to see those developments. Next up, though, something of a bit of an exciting one. We're going to be doing Newcastle's Team of the Decade and their worst, which Aaron said he could have picked three teams for.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with Matt Ketchell, aka Ketch from BBC Match of the Day magazine, Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport, and Greg Tomlinson, who has joined us at late notice, and we really appreciate him doing so. So much to talk about, but now we're going to have a little bit of fun. We're going to do Newcastle's Team of the Decade and Worst Team of the Decade, which I think the boys have had slightly a bit more fun with it. They've done a subs bench, they've done managers. Let's start with the best team of the decade. Aaron, who makes yours and Ketch's team of the decade? And me and Greg are judging this.
So, yeah, like you said, the worst team of the season, the worst team of the decade, sorry, was so easy to pick. Honestly, we could have picked about 40 players. Best team of the decade, we've gone Tim Krul in goal. You know, stalwart of the club, was there for years.
Speaks Geordie.
Married a Geordie girl,
lives in the has a house in the northeast. Been the best at one-on-ones I think I'll ever seen. Yeah. He used to be great at one-on-ones, and now he's the penalty king of the Premier League.
Yep. Fabrizio Colaccini, centre back with Jamal Lascelles. Colaccini, honestly, when he first came to Newcastle, was so bad. Yeah. Honestly, everyone thought, where have we got this guy from? And he had one season in the Championship, and he just never looked back. He was fantastic. Best hair cut we've ever had.
I remember a game away at Sunderland when he was just he was like Franz Beckenbauer.
Intelligent defender.
Mm. So he partners Jamal Lascelles, left back with Jose Enrique, one of the best left backs I've ever seen for Newcastle. So good, up and down, fantastic partnership with Jose Gutierrez. The right back was struggled with. Hasn't really been a standout.
We've had a lot of turnover in that position, and I like Danny Simpson, and he probably should have. I think he left on a free, didn't he?
Yeah.
I would have given him a contract, and then he obviously went on to win the league with Leicester. Debuchy was good for a season. Jan Matt was okay for a season. Bit of a hothead. Let us down, I think, the season we went down by breaking his hand away at Southampton by punching a wall.
Yeah.
So that I'd probably go Simpson at right back.
And then midfield in the centre we've got.
Wait, but just before though, Greg is furiously. You're agreeing with Simpson now.
I'm agreeing with Simpson.
Greg, you are shaking your head. No. Who gets in at right back?
I'm not a Danny Simpson fan.
We struggled. Who do you think?
I think, you know, after he left, we did realise actually that defensively he was probably better than we thought. But I think as a footballer, Debuchy is miles ahead. Mm. I guess we only had him for a short period of time, really, didn't we?
Yeah.
Injured a little bit.
We'll put Debuchy in then because
we'll go Debuchy. Yeah, it's a team effort.
And that's important, catch you.
Midfield, in the middle, we've gone Johan Cabaye, probably my favourite Newcastle player ever. Just
loved him.
An absolute wizard. Fantastic with his feet. His free kicks were amazing. Just how we ever got him and why we ever let him go. I know he obviously had a bit of a sour end, but yeah, fantastic. Alongside Cheick Tiote, God rest his soul, fantastic player. And obviously that goal against Arsenal just gets him in there, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Down the wing, we've gone Hatem Ben Arfa, the best/most annoying player I've ever seen. He could do things with a football that we haven't had since probably St. Maximin. He was just so exciting.
Another level. He should be ability wise up there with Messi and Ronaldo. I'm not joking. Mm-hmm. He's that good. He has that much ability.
Yeah, he's shown glimpses of it. He was very unlucky with his broken leg. He was just getting going. He'd scored a wonder goal at Everton, and then De Jong at Man City did his leg badly. I think it was a fib and tib break, and he was out for ages. And then he struggled, didn't he, off the field? He was always out. He put weight on, so it never helped. And
those
then
two goals though, was it Bolton in the league and Blackburn Rovers in the cup? He literally got the ball in our own half and took on 10 players and scored twice.
Unbelievable. Like Maradona. The Maradona-esque, those goals. Yeah. Loved him. Fans'
so
favourite.
So exciting to watch. Yeah, so Hatem gets in down one wing, and down the other wing, it's Matt Ritchie.
The antithesis of Hatem Ben Arfa, the grafter, the good trainer.
Just not fancy at all. He just runs a lot, which is what Newcastle fans love. And up front, we've gone for Andy Carroll, who is back to try and get himself even more into a legendary status. And we've gone for Demba Ba, who was just, again, why we ever let him go for pennies, really, was just a crime because, I mean, on his day, he was just...
I think he had a clause, didn't he?
Yeah,
he had a clause.
7 million or something.
And Chelsea came.
Chelsea.
You can't say no. He was so prolific. Yeah. So prolific. Yeah,
two quick questions. Manager, captain?
I think manager, I'd have to say Benitez. I love Rafa Benitez.
Has to be.
It has to be Rafa. I'm thinking about the captain. Probably Lascelles being the best captain in recent memory.
Oh, Aaron, who would you go with?
I'd have to go Colaccini.
I thought you was going to say Ketch. That surprises me.
I never liked him as a captain. He's very quiet, and I didn't think when the chips were down, I never had confidence in him to rally the troops. Whereas Lascelles can do that.
I think I'd go with Lascelles. If you think the leadership he showed when he was just a young kid on the edge of the team and what was an absolute joke of a relegation side, and he really stepped above it. And I think leadership quality wise, different styles of leadership. Colaccini would try and lead by his football. Lascelles is more of a, you know, up and at him leader. But
that's fair enough. What do you make so far? What is your team as well? We want to hear your 11. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 702558. Do you agree with Aaron and Ketch? Now, this is the one that I think they enjoyed just a little bit more. Worst team of the decade.
Yeah, plenty to choose from. goalkeeper Sells, Matt Sells, came from Belgium. This was a Rafa signing as well, and I think he was signed on the Y Scout software. They never watched him, apart from on video, and it showed. And he kind of came over here with loads of fake confidence, and it never happened for him. I remember going to Aston Villa away in the Championship, and we let that game slip into a draw right at the end, and he was at fault. And unfortunately, I think Rafa and Lee Charnley fell out over him. It was that bad of a signing. And then the back four, Santon. Now, we've put him at right back, but he used to play at left back.
Yeah.
Podgy would play him at left back, even though he was a right back. So
you're giving him his rightful place.
Yeah, and he never got going at all for me. Very strange. Sol Campbell sneaks
Sorry.
In.
Sorry, Charlie.
How dare you? I don't even want to hear the rest of this team. Legend.
It was a crazy, crazy signing. I remember he had a particularly dreadful game away at Stoke, around about 2010. Alongside him, we've got Yanga and Biwa.
Yeah.
Just a bit of a lunatic, wasn't he? He got red cards and...
And he was sort of a flair player, like when we were signing all these French players, and thought, oh, you know, that looks like a good season, good signing, you know. He was playing for teams in Europe, and then it just never happened. And then I think he went to Roma or Lyon after that, so he's clearly got talent, but...
He came with hype, and it never ever.
Was Fitz Hall in this decade?
I wouldn't have him in there. Or was he in the...
Before 2010, that's why.
I quite liked Fitz Hall. He was...
Did an outrageous piece of skill away at Derby County that was never caught on camera, but it was one of the best pieces of skill I've ever seen.
Well, he can't make the worst team in a decade with skill like that.
He did a job.
He wasn't great, though, was he, at defending?
He did a job one size. He did a job.
Yeah, left back. Yeah.
Lazar was signed. I mean, he's just been terrible, hasn't he? He farmed out on loan to, like, a second division Italian side, and a bad trainer, a bit of a bad influence around the training ground. Just we need to get rid of him, basically. He came when we really needed a left back in the Championship, and he just didn't do anything for us. Across the middle, Marvo at left wing again came with a lot of hype. Liverpool wanted him.
Failed a medical.
And then we've worked out why he failed a medical, because he couldn't stay fit.
Yeah.
And it was very fleeting. Any good moments were few and far between. In the middle, we've gone for Seam De Jong, who again came with loads of promise. And
loads
never,
of promise. So much promise.
That curse of Dutch League, the player signing thing.
I remember Newcastle signed him, and I thought, oof, I got a player on there.
Yeah. And there's just total disappointment. And it's actually made me think of another one. This is a kind of Newcastle thing where we sign a good player and it never happens. Torvan was dreadful.
Capella,
and then he's doing 20 goals and 15 assists a season in Ligue 1. It's a bit of a weird Newcastle thing.
Did you consider Fabrice Pancrate?
Oh, but he scored that amazing goal.
Was in 2009, and then it was terrible in the rest of the season.
Yeah, well, he gets in then.
We've got to rattle through him.
Yeah, bigger Romana, youngster. Really, our only good signing when we should have pushed on. Sammy Omiyobi, right wing. And then up front, Joselu and... Seam's brother, Luke De Jong.
Got to get the brothers in.
Luke De Jong came and did nothing.
I can't believe
it.
Joselu.
There's two that need special mention there, though, that haven't made it. One is that Doumbia.
Oh, Seydou Doumbia.
He was terrible. Yeah. And
Football
one,
manager legend, by the way. Yeah.
And somehow scores goals in the Russian league. And the one that everyone's forgotten about, the transfer deadline day signing, Shefki Kucci.
Oh, he was all right.
He was terrible.
I liked him.
He wasn't terrible.
He grafted.
Yeah.
Zero goals.
Did he never score?
Never scored.
See, we could have had about 50 players. I could be here all night.
We had far too much fun with it. We may do this as a feature as we get closer to the end of the year. We'll do lots of things coming from this decade. Well, it is Sheffield United versus Newcastle tomorrow. Delighted to say Callum Cheswick will be joining us next.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with Matt Ketchell, a.k.a. Ketch from BBC Match of the Day magazine, Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport, and Greg Tomlinson from the Newcastle United Supporters Trust. We were just doing our best team and worst team of the decade for Newcastle United. Looking at that game with Man City, which was 2-2, Newcastle getting a brilliant point at St James's. Now, though, we've turned our attentions to Sheffield United tomorrow night. Sheffield United absolutely doing brilliant in their first campaign back in the Premier League. They're going to be up for this one. Callum Cheswick joins us now, Sheffield United reporter for Varvel. Callum, thank you for giving us a little bit of your time. This is a big game for both sides tomorrow night. What are you making of the contest?
Nice to be back on again, fellas. It's going to be a tough one because I think Newcastle, again, with the sides they come up against, I mean, they've got points... away at Tottenham, they got points at home against Manchester United. They like teams who kind of come on to him, attack them, and can hit teams on the break. I mean, they've got the pace of San Maximin, which can hurt any side in the division, really. But when you look at United and how well Sheffield United and how well they've been able to break teams down and as well utilise the pace they've got in the likes of Moussa and Stevens and Fleck and Lundstrom making late runs, I think that could be key. I think we'll see another midfielder getting in on the action, quite well, just really making an impact on the game. But Newcastle, I think they do have to kind of come out a bit, because it's Sheffield United. They've just got promoted back from the Championship. The Tooting fans, they're not going to be wanting to see their side sitting back against the Blades. They're wanting them to go out and try and get 3 points. And I think that will play into the Blades' hands a bit if they do that.
Callum, catch you. I just wanted to ask you, now we're into the busy festive period, games coming thick and fast. We're seeing a few teams tonight rotating. Are Sheffield United going to rotate? Who do you think we might see? Because I did a story on Match of the Day. You've got about six strikers at the club, which is very interesting. Who might come in and who might come out?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it's a tricky one to call, because we've got Norwich away on Sunday. So, I mean, if you look at it in terms of the table, Newcastle's the trickier fixture, albeit any game in the Premier League is not easy. I think there might be one or two changes. I'm not too sure where, because the Blades were flagging after around 70 minutes against Wolves. But I think it's one of those, do you make the changes tomorrow night, or do you try and keep the same side that's gone seven unbeaten and then change it against Norwich, who we did play with a number 10 against last year and took 4 points off last season. So that's probably the more likely game where you see changes. Maybe one tomorrow night. I think John Lundstrom, who's had a fantastic season, he might come out, but it wouldn't really surprise me.
Oh, no,
if
Lundstrom,
Chris Wilder just kept it.
We need to change my fantasy
just
team.
Just kept then. It the same. Yeah, he's been an absolute superstar on that first one in.
Hi, Callum, it's Aaron here. I just wanted to talk to you a bit about Chris Wilder. Obviously, he's done fantastically well. He's absolutely loved by the fans. Yeah. You know, he's came up and so many Premier League clubs have said, you know, they're going to come up from the Championship and not change their style of playing, and they just end up, you know, going straight back down. He's now been sort of linked with bigger clubs, you know, the likes of Everton, and, you know, even bigger in some cases. What do you think he's thinking? Do you think he's going to see it out for the long run, or do you think he could maybe be persuaded by a bigger challenge?
So, the thing with Chris is he's a down-to-earth guy. I think he looks at things how they are. He doesn't try and, like, kind of make up his own fantasy world in his head. He sees things and sees things how they are, which is, well, it fits the Blades perfectly. I mean, he grew up in Sheffield, he's been a fan, he's been a ball boy, he's been a player, and now he's a manager, and things are going right. Not a lot of things have gone wrong in his tenure. And I think that is a big thing if you're looking at it from Chris Wilder's point of view. I mean, you see Everton struggling, you compare it to your own position. It's kind of, do you risk what you're doing at the Blades? Everton are a bigger club, I'll admit that right now, but for a bigger club, are you getting the better club right now? And I think the answer is no. I think if an Arsenal come in for him, it really wouldn't see me surprise him if he turned that down. I mean, I don't think he will, put it that way. But it's one of them where, does he risk letting everything that he's done with the Blades go to waste now, or does he see this one out and take the job through? Which I think he will. I think he's that type of bloke.
Callum, just a quick one. I was interested to see you sign Ravel Morrison in the summer. And I heard he did all right in pre-season, but we haven't seen him. What's the latest? Is he fit? Is he available? Might we see him over Christmas?
I think you're probably more likely to see him over the January period. But, I mean, this late side is so fit. I mean, again, it's getting to a tiring period. So there will be that rotation and variation within the squad, within the 18. So I think we might see him on the bench hopefully soon. He'll certainly play in the FA Cup game against Fylde. But I think he's not getting a look in because of how well the likes of Lundstrom and Norwood are doing. I mean, at the start of the season, if you'd have asked me, would John Lundstrom be one of your players of the season? The answer's probably going to be no. Mm. But at times he's pulled us out of games and he's won us games. So you can't take that kind of player out of the squad. I mean, he's a bit of a luxury player, Revel. Good on the ball, a good passer, and can see things that a lot of people can't. But when United are in the form that they are, playing the way that they are, I don't think you can change that too much. And I don't think that, I think that's why he's not getting in the team.
Yeah. Callum, it's another game where Steve Bruce returns to one of his former clubs yet again in the Premier League, hoping for a better performance while Newcastle are than the one they got against Aston Villa. What is your score prediction?
I can see it going somewhat similar, to be honest. I'll go 2-0 as well, same as the Aston Villa game. To
Sheffield
United.
Callum, really appreciate
you. Got to be confident.
yeah, really appreciate you coming on and giving us a little bit of your time, Callum. Man. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Callum Cheswick there, Sheffield United reporter for Varvel. He's saying comfortable for Sheffield United. 2 goals, 3 points and a clean sheet. Aaron, what is your score prediction? And firstly, how do you think the game will play out?
I think Callum was probably right. I think Newcastle fans probably won't want to, you know, the team to be sat off, you know, a newly promoted side like Sheffield, but I think that is probably how the game's going to go, unfortunately, with Newcastle being away. Let's go 1-1. Let's sit on the fence. Sorry, Charlie.
Sitting on the fence. Who should I go with? I want to end on the optimistic one, but I'm going to go with Ketch. He's nervous.
I don't fancy us because we do well against the top traditional top six clubs, and I think we're so inconsistent. The pattern would be that we'll not perform in this game, and it's going to be a very hostile atmosphere. We're going to be pressed by Sheffield United. You know, they're overlapping centre backs, will be pulling our defenders out of position. So I kind of don't fancy us, unfortunately. But I'd like to be proved wrong, so I'm going Sheffield United by 1 or 2.
Oh, Greg, it turns to you, the last prediction of the evening on the Newcastle Fan Show. It is Sheffield United tomorrow. Greg, give me something better than Aaron and Ketch offered.
Well, I think we need a reaction, and I think we're going to get one, because we were terrible at Norwich. We're terrible at Aston Villa, and we can't keep being that bad against newly promoted sides. You know, and if you take out what we've done at home, you know, that's just not good enough, and I think we need a reaction tomorrow night, and I think we're going to get one, and I think we're going to win 2-0.
Yes, you can come again, Greg. That's exactly what I wanted. This show needed a reaction. Greg is going for Newcastle 2-0 tomorrow night against Sheffield United. Either way, whatever the scoreline, we will be here as we always are to discuss it right here on the Newcastle United Fan Show on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.